Welcome to Political Rewind. It is 3:06 on a Friday afternoon. We're coming to you, as we do every week, live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Before we get into the show proper, I want to tell you that our wizard of Twitter, our Twitter titan, Robert Jimison, has put up for us an interesting question that you can answer a poll on at PoliticsGPB. What he's asking is, why are you going to be watching? What are you looking for? What's your reason for coming to the debates on Monday night? And you, if you go to PoliticsGPB, you'll see it at the top of the tweet stack, and you ought to answer that question. We'd be interested in your comments. Also, we're going to send out a last call today for our voter panel. We're still going to keep the door open for a few more people who want to get in the mix, saying that you think you should be part of the panel that we're going to do in a couple of weeks from now. If you're interested, here's the number to call, 678-757-4472. And Trevor Young and Jenny Amond are monitoring your calls. You'll get a recorded, you'll leave a recorded message. Keep it brief. And in the days ahead, we'll put that panel together and let you know more about it. Okay, as we said in the opening of the show a little while ago, we have Jim Galloway with us. Glad you're here again today, Jim. He, of course, is the political writer for the AJC and oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. Good to see
you
here,
Jim. Great to be here. Yeah, good to be here.
Julianne Thompson, she is a Republican political consultant. She is the former, we never have introduced you this way, Julianne, communications director of the Georgia Republican Party back in the day. But more than that, what else should we say about what other credential?
Well, as a legislative aide in the United States House of Representatives Judiciary Committee and Subcommittee on the Constitution. And that was all before I got involved in the Tea Party back in 2009.
Yeah, I understand that. Thank you for making sure we understand your resume a little more clearly. And Rebecca DeHart is back with us again, the director, executive director of the Georgia Democratic Party. Thank you for being here.
Thanks
it's
for
good
having
to have
me
you back.
Back.
Before we get going, because we do want to talk about the debate and our what everybody on our panel thinks about what's going to happen. I talked to NPR correspondent Sarah McCammon. She's been traveling with Donald Trump. She's been out with Mike Pence the last couple of days. So she's been kind of keeping her ear to the ground in terms of the inner workings of the Trump campaign as they approach the debate. And I wanted to share with you just a little of what she had to say.
Well, I think debate prep is just another example of how, you know, Hillary Clinton is a much more sort of traditional presidential candidate, and Donald Trump is an unconventional presidential candidate. We know from reporting that some of my colleagues at NPR have done this week that Hillary Clinton is spending a lot of time this week doing debate prep, doing practice, meeting with strategists, the kind of thing that, you know, candidates usually do ahead of a debate. She's kept a very, very light campaign schedule, something that Trump has criticized her for. Meanwhile, he's kept a very busy schedule, just, you know, campaigning and holding rallies and private events through even last night in Pennsylvania, although both are down today, both are off today, assumedly doing debate prep. We don't know much about how Trump is preparing. He's been sending out emails to his supporters, and I took a look at one last night. He sent out a few of these where he's basically crowdsourcing, asking his supporters, what do you want me to talk about? What are the issues that you think are important? And if you look at the survey, it's a 30-question survey, and he's asking things like, should I go after Hillary Clinton or should I stress my own positions? What issues are on your radar? Do you really want me to hear? Do you really want to hear talked about whether or not the moderators bring them up? And then if you click through the survey, which I did, and I clicked no opinion because I'm a reporter, it asks you for a donation at the end. So it's not clear to me if this is truly a debate prep strategy or if this is a fundraising strategy or both, but it's definitely unusual.
NPR political correspondent Sarah McCammon, of course, has been the chief of our Savannah Bureau for a long time before she went over to NPR. Jim, let me start with you. What do you think our listeners should be looking for Monday night? What's your snapshot of what you think that debate promises to be like?
Well, I think it promises to be like the restart button for the entire campaign, because you've got CNN, you've got Fox, you've got MSNBC, all the major networks. They're going to cover this like a national political convention, a one-day political convention, which I think is very interesting.
Well, when you say they're going to cover it like a political convention,
wall to wall.
Yeah.
I mean, they are starting. They are MSNBC is starting its coverage at 5 o'clock
right.
The day before.
Right.
And then going all day up until game time, which is what, 8 o'clock.
Just another reason why we just really ought to be turning our TVs off every now and then. All right, let's turn to Julianne and Rebecca. Rebecca, there is the conventional wisdom is that Hillary Clinton has more to lose than Donald Trump, because everyone knows how skilled she is at dealing with debates. She did the Benghazi testimony for, 7 hours without batting an eyelash. She got through it with great aplomb. Do you think it's true that there's more at stake here because expectations for her are going to be higher?
I think the expectations will be higher, also because nobody really knows what to expect Donald Trump to say next. He's off the wall and can flip-flop between the issues on a day-to-day basis. So they do look at a more traditional prepped candidate, somebody who's really putting in that thought to make sure that her platform can be concise and boiled down to just a couple of sentences, because they don't have a lot of time to give their answers. But I think we're going to have a really clear picture of what our choices are. I think it's going to be a kickstart, like Jim said, for the rest of this campaign season. And we're going to see just really clearly who we have to vote for.
Julianne, let's stick with Hillary Clinton for just a moment, and then we'll turn to Donald Trump. The rap on her always is, I mean, she's going to come with her, she will have memorized every briefing book in the universe. She will be prepared to go to drill down deeply on issues, because that's who she is. But the rap on her is that doesn't mean she knows how to connect to people out there in television and radio land. Is that going to be a problem for her?
Well, I agree. And I think that the campaign has really, in times past, has really tried to humanize her a lot more, because she doesn't seem to connect with people. But as far as the bar being set high for her, it's set very high, because she is a much more experienced debater than Donald Trump. And I expect her to be well prepared.
So, all right. With that said, Jim, what about turning to Donald Trump for a moment? And then we'll explore this in more detail in the next segment.
I think the thing to keep in mind is this is a 90-minute debate involving two people, not a 60-minute debate involving 17 candidates for the Republican nomination. And I think if you're Hillary Clinton, you know, the most dangerous words I think you could say to Donald Trump is, "Tell us more, Mr. Trump," because detail is going to, that is his weakness.
Yeah, that is going to be fascinating, Rebecca, whether Donald Trump can stand. Look, we know he's a showman. We know he understands how to use television. And he's got Roger Ailes prepping him. And there's nobody who knows TV better than Roger Ailes. But he's nevertheless going to be out there for 90 minutes, and people are going to ask questions about whether he has the expertise that's necessary.
Well, and I think you brought up a good point. Everyone, when we talked about how much she is going to prep for this debate, I mean, I think that's demonstrative of the way that she's going to approach things in the future, to get to know the policies, to really dive deep, to come prepared. And we're going to see somebody who hasn't spent that amount of time, and we're going to wonder if that's how he is going to approach things in the future.
All right, we got a lot we're going to talk about. Julianne, we're going to give you a chance in a minute, but we're in pledge drive right now, and we need you out there to help us keep this show, which you tell us you like so much, going. Jim Galloway from the AJC is with us, Rebecca DeHart from the Georgia Democratic Party, and Julianne Thompson, a prominent Republican here in Atlanta. And I promise to give you, and in the state for that matter, Julianne, I promise to give you a chance to respond to some of the things that are being said about Donald Trump and what we expect from him in the debate.
Right. Well, I think first and foremost, he's got to stay on message. And I think when he does stay on message, he pulls ahead in the polls. I think that people are going to require substance at this debate. If they don't see a lot of policy substance, then I think that they're going to tune off to him. But I do expect that, especially under his new campaign leadership with Kellyanne.
But Julianne, let me ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
Substance was certainly not his strength during the primary debates. He made inroads and became the unbeatable nominee, largely because he wasn't on any message. He became the showman that we've seen him to be and knew how to attack his opponents.
Well, he had national name recognition, number one, that helped him along. And number two, he came in at a time of great national dissatisfaction with government and the status quo. But going back to a comment before that Rebecca made, and with all due respect to her, she's great, but the comment about that you can't, that Donald Trump is flip-flopped and you can't really go by what he said, but yet you can look at Hillary Clinton to be prepared and to run the country that way. She herself has her share of flip-flops, including TPP, including her stance on gay marriage, sanctuary cities, Iran's right to enrich uranium. So I think that flip-flopping is something that is not exclusive to Donald
Trump.
So
I want to recommend to our listeners, there's a really fine piece in the Washington Post that you can go online and look at their website, which essentially does an advanced fact check of both of these candidates. It assumes that they're going to be making some of the same statements on the debate stage Monday night that they've been making throughout the campaign, and the Post goes through those presumed talking points for Monday night and gives people some insights about whether they're accurate or not. So I'd really recommend that to you. Jim Galloway, so let's talk about how Georgians will view this debate. Quinnipiac has a brand new poll out that seems to reinforce what we've seen in at least one other poll, and that's that Hillary Clinton has, who seemed to have pulled a little bit ahead of Trump in your poll of quite a while ago at this point.
Right.
Now Quinnipiac says that Trump is 7 points ahead of her. Can she do anything? Do you think at this point the race is solidifying in Georgia and people are falling back into their normal voting patterns? Or do you think there's something that can happen Monday night that might shake that up?
Well, I think old patterns are reasserting themselves. What I would say in the Quinnipiac poll is note that just like the Monmouth poll that we discussed on Wednesday, is it does show Gary Johnson kind of decline, and I think that's a big factor. Although, you know, look, I've got to be a little bit suspicious of the Quinnipiac poll, simply because it also measured Johnny Isaacson's support, and it gave him kind of the more traditional 55-34 split above a kind of a non-entity Democratic candidate, Jim Barksdale. But Isaacson gets 75% support among white women, which I can kind of believe. I can buy that. But the same poll gives Donald Trump 71% of support among white women, and I'm not sure that I buy that.
Interesting. Rebecca, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, there were a couple things that I'd want to learn about that poll. They also characterized the people who took the poll as either white or non-white. And they said that Hillary Clinton had 73%, I think, of the non-white vote. And that also is really strange to me, and I'm not exactly sure what the pollsters meant. Poll after poll shows that typically Hillary Clinton has 88 to 92% of the African-American vote. That is a huge discrepancy when you go from 88 to 92 to 73, and we don't see a poll anywhere showing that African-American voters are moving over to the Trump camp in case they're getting actually more solidified.
So
you and Jim think
perhaps this poll is an outlier.
Maybe.
Well, I tell you what, Bill, if I could jump in here. One thing just you might want to kind of keep in mind is that WSB TV has got its own poll that's supposed to be coming out tonight. So we'll kind of have a good
sense. Well, come on, Jim. You know the results. Why don't you break the news here on GPB?
No, not my job.
Okay. Julianne?
I do think we'll fall back into our pattern, although it might be a little bit tighter than in times past. But I don't think that the Republican Party can take anything for granted. So, I'm certainly not going to do that.
I was interested the fact, Jim Galloway, your colleague Greg Bluestein posted on Political Insider a fascinating story that Donald Trump has added to his list of potential Supreme Court nominees, and he says this is the list that he will draw from. A Georgian, Supreme Court Justice Keith Blackwell, has been added. Now, here's what I wonder, Jim. He wants to win Georgia. Is Blackwell really, Justice Blackwell, really on that list, or is this a pretty smart way to encourage Georgians that they ought to throw their vote his way?
I would say yes and yes. Yeah, this, look, he is. This is a 2012. This is a 2012 appointee by Nathan Deal to the Georgia Supreme Court. And if you want to send a signal to the Republican establishment that I'm on your side and you can rely on me, this is kind of a name that you throw out there because, of course, if you move a Georgia Supreme Court justice off the bench, then you're in position to reward a whole lot of other people to fill in all sorts of spots below that. So yeah, I would say this is a it's a very definite signal that I'm your establishment guy.
I think that Jim's correct in the fact that it sends a signal to the establishment. I think it makes a difference with longtime Republican Party voters, but I think the vast majority of Georgians have no idea who he is, so I don't think it'll make a difference to them.
All right, we got to take another break. Just enough time for me to say what I've said several times already. Here at Georgia Public Broadcasting, we get excited every day about the programming that we're able to present. We feel creative. We feel like we're informing you. And your support of what we're doing means the world to us because it makes you partners in the creative informational programming that we're able to do. Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're live in our Midtown Atlanta studios. We have Julianne Thompson, Rebecca DeHart, and Jim Galloway with us. I want to get to a couple tweets at PoliticsGPB. Barbara S., says the stark contrast between a prepared and disciplined stateswoman and a reckless reality show pitchman. That's her opinion of the debate. Troy Tarpley said that you, Rebecca DeHart, just said the debates will really show us who to vote for. Bull, they're leaving out Governor Gary Johnson. And of course, that has been an issue throughout this. A Libertarian candidate did not meet, neither did Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, the threshold necessary to be part of the debate. So again, we're at Politics GPB. Let's do a quick go around and then move on to another topic. Julianne, what I think I'm hearing you say is that if Trump behaves in a kind of a more statesmanlike way, you think he's going to succeed in this debate. And what that suggests is you feel he's not going to play to his base. He's going to play to those voters out there who aren't quite sure that they're ready for him. Yeah.
Well, I think Trump is going to be Trump, but I believe that if he stays on message and if he gives substance with regard to policy, he's going to get a bump after this debate. But I think that he needs to do that. But I don't think for 1 minute that he is going to turn into a different candidate because he's been successful by being himself thus far.
Rebecca, Hillary Clinton, does she have to present the human more accessible side of herself to be a success in this debate? Or is it enough for her to be a policy pro?
Well, I mean, I think that she does have to show both, as every presidential candidate does. I think we need to be wary about not putting expectations on a candidate that are a double standard. I mean, nobody's talking about Donald Trump right now. How many times is he going to smile? How many times is he going to look relaxed? How many times is he going to look warm and inviting? And this is the conversation we're going to have to deal with listening to for the next 3 days. And I wish it were a little more balanced just in general in politics. But to get to your other question, too, I see what Julianne is saying, but I also think that this is going to be a big bump for Hillary. Hillary is good on a debate stage. She is good behind a podium. She is more well-versed in foreign affairs than anyone we've seen, I think, in 2016 up behind a podium on either side. She knows her issues, she knows her policy, and she's very comfortable talking about them.
Jim Galloway, care to speculate what headline we might read on the front page of the AJC on Tuesday morning?
Well, I don't know about that, but let's debate what color tie Donald Trump is going to wear.
Thanks, Jim.
I think I will tell you what I think if we see the same Hillary Clinton that showed up in Philadelphia at the DNC, I think she'll exit in pretty good shape and get the headline. Here's a question though. I mean, these whole last few weeks, the Clinton campaign has been portraying Donald Trump as kind of the reckless bull in a china shop when it comes to virtually any issue. If he can pull off at least 30 to 40 minutes, which is you figure how long the most of the crowd will tune in, a kind of a subdued, composed Donald Trump, what does that do to her strategy?
Yeah, I mean, clearly they, Rebecca, that's a great question. Clearly the Clinton campaign is doing debate prep that is geared, at least to some extent, they've been secretive about this. We can only speculate. They're trying to find ways that she can get it under his skin, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. We don't really know what to expect for him. I think there have been some times where he has been more on message and he hasn't been as, you know, explosive. But I don't know if it'll have an overall effect, really. Clinton just released her new ad today on women, and it is an ad with little girls looking in the mirror, you know, kind of examining themselves while Trump is saying just hateful, divisive things about women in the background. And I think her strategy thus far has been using his own words against him, and there is still a plethora more of them out there. So I don't think she's going to run out of material if he happens to stay on message.
Well, I'm glad.
Minutes.
Okay, so Julianne, I don't want to quite leave the debate issue then, because I think Rebecca just says something interesting. We traditionally, you know, there's this kind of, I think, sexist notion that a male candidate has to be careful about how he treats a female opponent because the gender unbalance, some people think, means that a guy is beating up on a woman and that's not good. Is that true? And does Hillary Clinton have, I mean, does Donald Trump have to be careful about that?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to. I think if you talk to people who are over 35 years old or maybe over 30 years old, they will say that, yes, it is going to make a difference to them depending on how he treats her. And I think that it's a very effective ad. The ad you're talking about, I saw it, and I think it's very effective. But I think if you speak to a lot of people who are under 30, the millennials who really believe they're not so much defined by their gender, then I think that they're not going to expect I don't think that they're going to be affected by the fact that she is going to be held to the same tough standard that he would if he were running against a man.
All right. Then I have an exit question that I want to give each of you a shot at, because it moves beyond the debate to the general election dynamic. Jenny Ament, our senior producer, and I had a conversation this afternoon in which we discussed, and she suggested that, you know, as big a barrier as it was for Barack Obama to become president, the first African-American president of the United States, maybe the barrier for a woman to be viewed as presidential and to become president could even be higher. Rebecca?
I mean, I think that's interesting. I've been in some of those same conversations. I think it's hard to compare those two, and I don't know if it really gives us anything. But what I do think is interesting about sexism in particular is sexism is really, it goes to this root of women aren't able to be capable to make decisions or aren't as intelligent because our emotions get in the way.
Jim, can I let, I'm sorry, yes. Go ahead, finish that sentence.
No, just that it somehow affects our intelligence or our way to get things done. And I think that this ceiling is hard to break.
Jim, what do you think about that? And I don't mean to create a false equivalency between Obama and Clinton, just the notion that the country is or is not prepared for a female president.
I think it is prepared. I think what Hillary Clinton has to show is that the way she arrives at a decision isn't any different than what her husband or what Barack Obama or what George W. Bush, the manner in which he arrived at decisions. I mean, you bring your experts together, you consult with them, and then you make the call. I think she can. I don't think that's too high a bar there.
Julianne, I gotta say, it strikes me that her entire public career, Hillary Clinton has struggled in part and been the object of a great deal of ridicule and attacks, and in part because she is a woman. Do you disagree with that?
You think that she has struggled?
I think that being a woman has been, that it's been a barrier for her in her entire public life.
Oh, I think it's catapulted her. I don't think it's been a barrier for her.
All right.
And I think that we can't have it both ways. I don't think on one hand we can play the woman card, you know, when surrogates get out there and they say, oh, Donald Trump is attacking, the fact that he's attacking her about her health is sexist. And then on the other hand say, you know, the way that she goes about making a decision is going to be the same as a man. You can't have it both ways.
All right. I've got to give, that's got to be the last word because we've got to go to a pledge break. But when we come back, let's talk a bit about these awful police shootings and how we think, How do we respond? How do we feel about that first? And then are they going to have an impact in the presidential election? And welcome back to the show, Julianne Thompson, Republican political consultant and a former leader in the state party in many roles in the party, Rebecca DeHart, director of the Georgia Democratic Party, and our friend Jim Galloway from the AJC is with us as well. Jim Galloway, breaking news during the show, Donald Trump has now won the endorsement of Ted Cruz.
Well, I'm going to wait until I hear it out of his mouth. We've been here before. I watched the speech. Let's hear how he endorses him.
All right, that's
fine. But I will tell you. I think that threat by Reince Priebus last Sunday may have had some effect here.
Julianne's nodding. Yeah, go ahead.
Priebus is basically saying that if you're not behind Donald Trump right now, don't plan on running for president in 2020 or 2024.
All right.
Whatever.
We'll see how that plays out. Julianne?
I agree with Jim. I agree with everything you just said. And I would add to that the polling that shows if Rick Perry gets into the race that he would beat Ted Cruz for United States Senate. I'm sure that had something to do with it as well.
All right. Let's turn with...
I want to see how Ted Cruz dances, though, first.
That's right. We have only a couple of minutes left. I want to turn, and I wish we had more time today to do it. This has been, I think, for all of us, an incredibly dispiriting week. The most recent police shootings in Oklahoma, in Charlotte, have once again reminded us of this divide we have in the country, of the violence in the community that... You know, we're uncertain whether police are at fault, whether the victims were in some ways responsible. So I want to take just a minute. I don't want to talk for a moment about the political implications of this. I want to get your thoughts, and I'd like to start with you, Jim. How is this resting with you, just as a citizen of this country?
Well, look, I think just the mass of recordings and evidence, it's highly unsettling. You know, I mean, you and I are kind of old hands here. I mean, we remember the 70s, and how the narrative of the 70s was largely guided by what you believed and what you read, not by what you saw. Mm. This is very much about what you see and what you hear. And so, yeah, I think it's tremendously unsettling.
Rebecca, just before I went on the air, a video that Keith Scott's wife recorded with her cell phone was released. We're not going to play it on this show, but by now you can see it all over the web. She is narrating her own video in which she tries to talk her husband and the police into coming to some understanding. He's in the car. We don't know what happened, really. The video doesn't make clear what the circumstances of the shooting, but what it does make clear is the heart-wrenching reality of this woman watching her husband shot and killed in front of her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Makes my chest tight when I think about it, and even to try and speak about it. I think about if I were to watch my husband get shot before me, I just can't. And I'm a mama of a little boy, and I'm raising him, and I don't know how to talk to him about this. And he goes to a school that's diverse, and I have learned so much as I'm white, as a white mom with a white boy, the differences of the way that I raise my son compared to what some of my friends have to raise and teach their sons about how to be more careful in ways that I never thought of. I had somebody tell me the other day, it struck me, I played flashlight tag every day when I was a little kid in the summertime. And I talked to somebody who's a mom who had to instruct her kid never to play flashlight tag because it's really dangerous for a young black man to be playing flashlight tag. Mm. That really struck home for me. I'm having a hard time with this, Bill.
Julianne, I know you are too. And part of the question I ask you, and this is the hardest one of all, I think, is in the middle of one of the most divisive political campaigns we've ever seen, pitting Democrats against Republicans, blacks and Hispanics, all of the divisiveness we've seen. When these shootings take place, is there any hope that we can find a way to come together as a nation and heal around these issues and then solve the problems that lead to these shootings?
Well, I mean, as we were talking about before, and I just want to echo everything that Rebecca just said, I'm also a mom. I also have a son who's 11 years old. And to see this happening in our country. It breaks my heart. We have a long way to go with regard to justice. We have a long way to go with regard to equal treatment. But we have to realize that violence is never the answer, and it's never going to solve the problem. And yes, I do believe that we can come together as a nation. But do I think it's going to be an easy road? Absolutely not. But conversations like the one that we're having right now, where we completely take politics out of it and make it about our common humanity, if we could do this more often, I think that that's really the only way that we can solve these problems. I don't think it's political.
If I can jump in, too, I think we really need to listen to the protesters in Charlotte. I think they're speaking from their experience, and it's the only way we're going to learn about it. I think we need to listen to the folks right now who are taking a stand and showing, you know, and protesting and showing their view of the world and how it feels to be oppressed. We need to listen, and we need to listen carefully.
Clearly, we all need to be hearing what the various voices are saying. Jim, I do think it's only fair to point out that in the Keith Scott shoot, we already know. I mean, we have an officer now indicted for manslaughter
in the Tulsa shooting.
The jury is still far, far out. We don't quite understand the circumstances of the Keith Scott shooting. And the cell phone video doesn't do much to clarify what may have happened there, right?
Right, right. And the police chief involved there said the video that they've got, and we're not talking about the same video. I don't think it does. It's not clear whether the man had anything in his hand or not. And I think it will. I think what we're going to see is this is. I think this is going to be very quickly passed off to the U.S. Justice Department.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's interesting. With a very brief time, Jim, I want to come to you on this. Howie Kurtz, who's now the media critic for Fox News, had an interesting column today, blog today. He said that the Washington Post and other news organizations did not point out that the officer involved in the Charlotte shooting and the police chief are both African American. Kurt says it wasn't until like the 30th paragraph in that story. He sees some ill intent there. I don't know if that's fair or not, but I do think it's interesting that that was the case.
I think it's interesting, but I think you've seen some studies out there that show that the dynamic is not necessarily a racial
right.
one
Important.
In these confrontations.
All right.
It's authority versus a black male.
I have got to bring this to a conclusion pretty quickly. Rebecca DeHart, Julianne Thompson, Jim Galloway, thank you. I'm Bill Nygut. We're going to be back with a special edition of Political Rewind on Tuesday at 2:00, our debate follow show. Please join us then.